Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We all know that February is Black History Month. The creation of that month, which dates back almost 50 years, created some space for learning about important moments in Black history in almost all public schools and in popular media. But the way we teach Black history can be problematic, and focusing on Black Americans in February doesn't stop them from being left out of the narrative the rest of the year. This hour, we're going to take a critical look at how we teach Black history and talk about how we can do better. Later in the hour, Stephanie Jones, Assistant Professor of Education at Grinnell College, will join us. My first guest today is LeGarrett King. He's an Associate Professor of Social Studies Education at the University of Missouri and the founding director of the Carter Center for K-12 Black History. Hello, LeGarrett.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
No problem.
And before we dig into how we teach Black history in schools, I want to talk about your history, because you started your career as a social studies teacher, right?
Yes, I taught for 8 years in Georgia and Texas.
And when you were teaching and encountering these opportunities to teach Black history in your classroom, you got a little frustrated, didn't you?
Yes, actually, my last year teaching, I was teaching at the historic Booker T. Washington High School in the city of Atlanta, which is the alma mater of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So I was really excited to teach at that school with so much history. And when I was teaching the students and I would try to pump them up, it seems like there was a lot of apathy as it pertains to Black history education.
Where do you think that was coming from?
I don't know. In talking with many of the students kind of connected Black history with slavery and anything that connected to oppression. So when you think about it psychologically, if you're learning history, which history is about identity, right? This is the first time we understand who we are. And if the majority of the narratives that you hear about yourself is connected to oppression, sometimes you get a little mad, upset, a little apathetic based on that type of history that's presented to you.
As a teacher and as someone who clearly loves history, I can only imagine how excited you were to be in those classrooms, to engage with your students, to give them the opportunity to say, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. may have sat in that corner of the classroom where you are right now. So as you were going through this process and feeling that apathy, feeling your frustration, what did that make you want to do?
Well, I figured I needed to do something. For one, my level of education concerning Black history was limited as well, right? Although I felt that I knew more than maybe the average teacher, from just looking up things, just being curious. But in terms of my teacher prep program, in terms of the education I received throughout elementary through secondary, I realized that I needed a little bit more education, per se, on Black history. So that's when I turned my attentions to get my PhD at the University of Texas. And as they say, the rest is history.
Well, and history a lot of us haven't learned yet, I think. You are the founding director of the Carter Center for K-12 Black History. So you're working hard now to create better curriculum.
Yes, most people don't realize that in terms of public schools, we have been dealing with how to effectively teach Black history since the late 1800s. So one of the first Black history textbooks used in schools was in 1894 by Edward A. Johnson, who was a lawyer and principal in North Carolina, who wanted to write a textbook because he noticed that the type of Black history that was taught in history classes were very poor. And he decided to write a textbook. And since then, there has been several different Black history educators that have written textbooks to try to improve the curriculum in schools. And throughout our time, even during the 1960s, we try to develop resources. And today we have tons of resources, but we still see problematic teaching in the classroom. So the Carter Center of K-12 Black History Education is essentially where we come together and we talk about Black history issues in the classroom and try to improve on our instruction, try to improve on our curriculum, and we also advocates for teaching Black history throughout the year.
Well, and let's talk about February. Let's talk about Black History Month. As I mentioned, the history of that goes up back almost 50 years. In fact, there were precursors to that that go back farther. So this month, this February dedicated to Black history, I mean, it seems like a tremendous opportunity in many ways. Let's talk about what's good about it.
Well, there has been kind of a misnomer about Black History Month, right? Given the context of it, when it began in 1926 with Negro History Week by Carter G. Woodson, who is considered one of the fathers of Black history and the namesake for the Black History Center I direct, Black History Month was never intended to be just taught in February, right? Black History Month or Negro History Week during that time was supposed to be the summative assessment, if you will, of what students learn throughout the year about Black history, right? So for some reason throughout the years, we have kind of co-opted to say that February is the way to teach Black history, right? Or the only month or the only way to teach Black history throughout the year. But given the context of the time, 1926, Woodson wanted a safe space, right, to teach about Black history. So many different Black schools at that time taught Black history, communities, churches, all these different places in the Black community taught Black history throughout the year. And February here was for the pageants, was for the different events to help people understand, okay, this is what we learned throughout the year. So people have to understand that February was never meant to be the only time to teach it, but it was meant to be the place where we now see, wow, this is what we learned throughout the year.
A culmination, a celebration even.
Exactly.
So putting the emphasis on teaching Black history in February has created, as I mentioned earlier, it has created a space that makes sure that there is a focus on Black history. So that seems like a positive thing, but it also sounds like you're saying the way that this has evolved has made it the only space for Black history in a lot of schools.
Well, yes, I tell people all the time, you don't love your mother just one day out the year. Right. You know, and the same concept applies, right, to Black History Month. Right. It is not meant for just, hey, let's just celebrate February with Black history. But you are right in a sense where February gives kind of a focus, a spotlight on Black history for many different places that may not teach it properly throughout the year. It does give space, but even looking through the research and looking through news stories, Black History Month is not being taken up with care as well, right? There's still these kind of problematic approaches to Black history, even during the month of February.
And what do we know about what a month is actually not very long, and Black history, of course, is American history, so there are so many things that we could be talking about. The civil rights movement tends to be the focus of Black History Month, right?
Right. So there, I call it kind of the triad of Black history education, right? So Black history is typically centered on slavery, Reconstruction, and civil rights, right? If you have a really good teacher, maybe you'll talk about Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois, maybe Marcus Garvey, maybe different individuals, but typically the topics are centered on slavery, Reconstruction, and civil rights. And even when we teach that, many of those narratives are too celebratory sometimes, maybe too sanitized, too limited in the ways in which we kind of approach those topics. And particularly when we teach about the civil rights movement, we're a little bit too progressive, right? Like, oh, racism was over after Dr. Martin Luther King died, right? And now everything is right in the world. Civil rights movement was so great, et cetera, right? So we do have these we lack nuance in the ways in which we approach Black history.
Now, of course, we lack nuance in a lot of the ways that we approach many different parts of our history. But I will say that I, thinking back on my education, am shocked at how Eurocentric it all was. When we learned about world history, we basically learned about Europe. So when you look at social studies curriculum as a whole, do you see that evolving? Are we getting better at not being quite so Eurocentric?
Well, here's the thing about the social studies curriculum and just a curriculum in general as it pertains to Black histories and other ethnic-specific histories is that the progression has been cosmetic, right? So I tell people all the time, quantitatively, we have improved since the early 20th century, but qualitatively, we have not improved in the ways in which we kind of approach these particular subjects, right? So while there's more quote-unquote names that students may have to learn through various different standards, in terms of the way in which they learn it, right, is through what you said, kind of this Eurocentric way of understanding about Black people, which is not really the case.
I want to talk more about some of the things that we're doing badly before we focus on the future and talk about what we can do well. But the fact that we are focusing on Black history mostly during the month of February is problematic. But another one of the big problems that you point out in your research is the perspective of the history mm-hmm. that we're teaching. Tell me more about that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So many people like to say that Black history is American history or Black history is U.S. history, right? And while we understand what people are trying to say, that Black people are important throughout history, in reality, that comment is short-sighted, right? Black history is not American history in the ways in which we present it today. And the reason why I say that is that when we think about Eurocentricity or Eurocentric history, Black people are only important, and this is in the social studies curriculum, the history curriculum, Black people are only important through white contact or European contact, meaning the first time many of our school children learn about Black people is through enslavement, right? And there's thousands and thousands of years of history of Black people before enslavement, right? I talked with this guy one time, and he said if Black history was 24 hours, slavery is 1 second out of that 24 hours.
And we're going to have to pick up there in just a moment. My guest right now is LeGarrett King. He's an associate professor of social studies education at the University of Missouri and the founding director of the Carter Center for K-12 Black History. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events, including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are taking a critical look at how Black history is taught in our schools. With me right now, LeGarrett King, Associate Professor of Social Studies Education at the University of Missouri and the founding director of the Carter Center for K-12 Black History. And LeGarrett, just before the break, we were talking about how when we teach Black history, much of it is taught from a white perspective. You were talking about slavery, which is usually the first introduction to Black history, that it's like introducing anyone's history at the point of contact with Europeans, which is something that we do with a lot of different people from around the world and Native people in the United States as well when we teach history. So, but the problem of perspective doesn't stop with slavery.
No. It's the way in which, put it like this. We, in this country, we have adopted kind of this racial liberal framework where everything has to be the same racially, right? So Black people and white people respond the same way, right? Through their history, right? So in terms of perspectives, what I have argued is that we need like a Black historical consciousness, right? And are looking through Black history through Black perspectives and Black lenses, right? Because the types of history that we learn is just different between the two races, right? Or through any different racial or ethnic category, based on kind of the experiences that each group has experienced in the United States.
Well, let's take another example. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Brown versus the Board of Education. The way that we learn about that, the perspective of who we're thinking about when we learn that history is incredibly powerful. Can you flesh that out for me a little bit?
Yeah, so Brown versus Board of Education is considered one of our greatest Supreme Court cases, right? Because this notion of separate, but equal is wrong, and that we all need to be integrated in our society. So we have this notion that Brown versus Board was so great, right? But in many respects, when we look at, the data and when we look at the history, first, people in the Black community did not want integration, right? In many respects, right? In terms of schooling, their purpose was to have equal financial contributions to their schools, right? Buses for their children to ride on to go to schools, air condition, right? Better buildings, right? And then once the Brown versus Board of Education and the policies began to be implemented throughout the country, many Black teachers lost their jobs. Many Black administrators lost their jobs. When Black students began to go to white schools, because white children were not supposed to go to Black schools, right? But Black children began to go to white schools. What happened was there began this kind of cultural incongruency with the teachers and the Black students. And that's when you began to hear the discourse about the achievement gap and the trouble with Black students, when in reality, Black schools were just fine. Teachers were wonderful. Students got culturally relevant education in those particular schools. And when they began to integrate into these predominantly white schools, that type of education wasn't presented.
And as you mentioned, many Black teachers lost their jobs. Many Black students lost their Black teachers. And research has shown us a great deal about how powerful it can be for a Black student to have a Black teacher.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
So I want to bring our next guest into the conversation. We are talking about how we teach Black history. We're going to focus on the future and some best practices, some new ideas as the hour goes on. But I want to talk a little bit more about some of the things that we are doing wrong, because it does open up our eyes to things that a lot of us haven't thought about before. I want to bring Stephanie Jones into the conversation, assistant professor of education at Grinnell College. She's focused her research on understanding how Black women and girls are treated in the classroom and is behind the project Mapping Racial Trauma in Schools. You can follow the project on Facebook or Twitter. Hello, Stephanie.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And I want to talk to both of you about this idea of racial trauma in schools, and focused primarily on the kinds of lessons that our students are learning. Of course, this is a very big topic, and Stephanie, I hope you'll come back and we'll talk about it in more depth sometime. But on your Facebook page, on your Twitter feed, you share a lot of examples of lessons that are part of different curricula that really do create racial trauma in our schools. Can you give me an example of that, Stephanie?
Sure. What I realized through tracking these incidents is that we have teachers who are currently in the classroom who are focused on doing reenactments and simulations of difficult histories. So, for example, recently there was an incident in a school where a teacher wanted students to understand how difficult it must be to have been an enslaved person. And she asked all of the Black students to lie down on the floor while she allegedly put her feet on their back to have them understand what pain is like. Or another example of a school, a middle school, who decided that they wanted students to understand what it was like to be at the bottom of a slave ship. So they tied students' hands and wrists together with masking tape and made them lay down in a classroom while a clip of Roots was playing in the background. So these are some of the type of extreme examples that are happening inside of schools where people are attempting to teach this history, but they are going about it in really dangerous ways.
Well, and sometimes these lessons are written into the curriculum. You have shared examples of thought experiments where students are supposed to come up with reasons why slavery was a good thing.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's one part that Dr. King spoke on previously, is that we have to start looking closely at the curriculum that's being written for teachers to follow inside of schools. And they will rationalize it in certain essay topics like name three good reasons why African Americans made good slaves, or name three reasons why Native American or Indigenous people did not make good slaves. And they ask students to do pros and cons of slavery. So we have to really start thinking about, first of all, who's writing this curriculum? Second of all, what are we really asking students to do by answering these questions? And there is no good rationale for why we are making students do this curriculum. And we have to start pressing and interrupting this type of education, because it's not good.
Well, and as shocking as these events in classrooms are, when teachers are presented with this curriculum, we're not typically asking teachers to look at the curriculum in depth and think about it critically and rewrite things that they find to be problematic. So, I mean, the root of this problem, it's a multi-stem problem, but the root of this problem is before it gets into the classroom.
Absolutely. And I find that my profession as a teacher educator, first of all, is about helping them to unlearn some of the bad teaching that they received as students. Most of the time when we're thinking about people who want to enter into the teaching profession, they typically are white women who have had good experiences in schools. And so they come in with the idea that what was good for me is also going to be good for this student that's going to be sitting in front of me. So a lot of that has to do with the ways in which we were taught. And then we have teacher education programs here in Iowa and across the nation that are helping prospective teachers to think closely about what they're attempting to do with their students and why. And then there's another type of teacher education that comes after graduation, which is, once you get your first job, how are you interacting with the teachers that are around you? What models are you looking for? What mentors do you have? And if you don't have people around you in spaces that are being critical of the type of the curriculums that school districts are buying into or that states are buying into, you're going to get this repetitive process of endangering students. So we have to have all of these different ways within our system to break open how we know what we know and what we thought was good teaching.
Well, and so far we've been focusing on social studies curriculum. We've been talking about teaching history. But Stephanie, right, your research goes beyond that. And a lot of your focus is on literacy, right?
Absolutely. And this call is not by accident that I'm on with Dr. King. Both he and I are teachers, or former teachers, of Atlanta Public Schools. I used to be a high school English teacher, and I taught at Frederick Douglass High School in the city of Atlanta. And what I noticed in my own curriculum and the textbooks that the school district bought was that I didn't have any interaction with Black writers until Olada Equiano and the transatlantic slave trade. And then it jumped to Phyllis Wheatley, then it jumped to Martin Luther King, and then by the end of that, we had to get ready for high-stakes testing, right? So we have this really shallow interpretation of what counts not only as Black history, but also who is writing and composing and thinking through these times. So I don't think that part of my responsibility as a teacher educator is to reflect on what I did as a high school English arts language arts teacher, and in what ways I could have made that process better for the Black and brown students who were in my classes. So it happens across the board in all disciplines.
Well, and it's, when you say what you could have done to make it better, I mean, every teacher bears that responsibility, but that's a lot of responsibility for each individual teacher too. I mean, when you're working with your students, how do you talk about bearing that responsibility?
Well, I think about Dr. Bettina Love's work when she talks about this idea that teachers are not curriculum followers. We're educators, which means that even if someone sets a curriculum in front of me, it's up to me to figure out how to give students the best equitable instruction. And so that means that I have to have a critical eye. And yes, it is hard work, but if I refuse to do that hard work, either out of fear or incompetency or just downright refusal, I'm going to continue to get the same results that I have been getting. And it's alarming when we look back at the research on what students are learning about slavery and other difficult histories that have happened globally, that students are leaving school with a very limited knowledge of what's happened in the world. And I think for me and for other teachers, being reflective is part of our practice. This is the work that we have to do. There is no other choice.
LeGarrette, I would love for you to add your thoughts about this as well. You know, so much of the curriculum that is implemented in schools all over the country are designed to create students who are, I'll use quotes here, college ready, but also to prepare students to take these standardized tests that get them into college. So this system is huge. We're not just talking about, you know, the curriculum that you're dealing with in one classroom. This whole system is designed this way to perpetuate itself. Can you share your thoughts about that?
Well, yes, and it is very unfortunate that those barriers are being placed. I tell teachers all the time that we're not here to teach a curriculum. We're here to teach citizens, right? So, you know, similar to what Dr. Jones and Dr. Love has kind of promoted in terms of, you know, these educators who need to really understand, well, what are the important types of knowledge that we need to have competent and responsible citizens?
The tests that we do prepare these students for, Stephanie, that kind of puts a lot of teachers in a box, because it's important that they prepare those students to succeed on those tests, et cetera. How do you grapple with that?
I think the first initial way that I grapple with that is by telling the truth, that you are going into a profession that prioritizes the learning of these high-stakes tests and the results that will come from them. Basically, that you will get good scores, you will get good grades, you'll do somewhat exceptionally well on the ACT and the SAT if you have access to prep courses, if you have access to the language and the knowledge that it takes to pass these tests in order to get you into a good college. So it's just a revolving door of things that have to be done. But I also, with them understanding that truth, I also allow them to say, I can hold both of these things at the same time, that yes, I may have to prepare these students for high stakes testing, but also I do have an opportunity to teach material that matters, that is relevant to who they are and where they are in their lives and in the world, and that I can do both of these things at the same time. So I think we have received or I guess you can say adopted a form of conversation where we think that all we care about is high stakes testing. And it doesn't have to be that way. And administrators and policymakers and people who are involved in education on all different levels can begin to support teachers by not inundating them with so much testing that we can't get to the real teaching and learning.
We're taking a critical look at how we teach Black history, but also how we approach students of color in our education system, all students in our education system today. You are welcome to join our conversation with your questions, share your experiences. We'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we're coming up on another break here in a moment. But LeGarrette, when we get back from the break, I want to focus on the research you've done and the resources that you are providing to teachers now. I mean, that's a large part of your mission, is to give teachers better tools to teach better, right?
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit, just in about 30 seconds, about what your focus is at the Carter Center?
So at the Carter Center, we are we have three types of goals. We want to make sure that we develop research around K-12 Black history, not really focusing on what's going wrong in Black history education in schools, but what's going right. So we definitely are looking for teachers, excellent teachers of Black history education, to make them models, national models. Also, it's about teacher professional development, where we want to make sure we leave space, right, for teachers to come and engage with Black history instruction. And our biggest event is the Teaching Black History Conference, which is happening later on this month on the 26th and 27th. And last, we are really focusing on connecting Black history educators from around the country and eventually around the world in networking, because there's so many different educators, community educators, museum educators, and just lay people that are doing wonderful things with Black history education,
right,
but
and
we don't know each other.
Right. We'll pick that up in just a moment. LeGarrett King, an associate professor of social studies education at the University of Missouri, also with us, Stephanie Jones, assistant professor of education at Grinnell College. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are taking a critical look at how Black history is taught in our schools. We're also talking about how we can engage better with students of color, with all students, as we teach this history across the curriculum, not just in social studies classes. And you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions, with your experiences, with your concerns as a parent or as a teacher. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, LeGarrett King, Associate Professor of Social Studies Education at the University of Missouri and the founding director of the Carter Center for K-12 Black History. Stephanie Jones is also here, an Assistant Professor of Education at Grinnell College. She's focused her research on understanding how Black women and girls are treated in the classroom and is behind the project Mapping Racial Trauma in Schools. You can follow that project on Facebook or on Twitter. And LeGarrett, I want to ask you for some basic principles as we move forward when we look at rewriting curricula, when we look at teaching lessons in our classrooms that help students get a broader perspective, a better understanding of history and of Black history. What are some of the basic principles we need to think about when we look at how history is taught?
So for Black history, we need to focus on five basic components, right? So the first would be talking about notions of power, right? And by power, I'm talking about looking at the various different systems that have influenced Black people's lives, right? So race, racism, white supremacy, anti-Blackness, those types of critical conversations are needed in Black history classrooms. Second, it's about Black agency, or the types of things that Black people did for themselves that they kind of approached differently, that they created spaces for them in this very racist kind of society in which they grew up in. Next would be something that is not really talked about mostly in curriculum is this concept about joy, right? Although there has been much pain and oppression within Black historical narratives in the U.S., many times we don't focus on joy, Black joy. How did Black people succumb all this pain and suppression? The difficulty with this concept of joy is not trivializing the pain and oppression that happened within the U.S., particularly in history. Next would be kind of focusing on kind of a global Black history and connecting the diaspora with Black people in the U.S. And then last, and very important, is this concept of intersectionality, right? What we have done in Black history many times is what a lot of proponents have critiqued the traditional curriculum is. We have focused on a certain type of Black people, Black history, right? Middle class, Black men, heterosexual, Christian, when we need to kind of focus on all the Black identities. And including that as well is we need to stop being too celebratory, right? Because notions of Black history and Black people have dealt in notions of sexism and all these kind of isms that plague us today. So those are kind of the five components I think that any Black history program or policy needs to include in the classrooms.
That's interesting, your comment about not being too celebratory. I mean, that's something that obviously we've seen throughout different history curriculums over the years, you know, painting people as perfect or
yes.
idols. But I think that not doing that in Black history feels particularly risky or problematic, mm-hmm. and probably particularly for white teachers.
Interesting. Well, the notion of history, particularly Black history, is about humanity, right? No one's perfect, right? There's been conversations about Dr. Martin Luther King, conversations about Malcolm X, all these different people. But the key to history is not necessarily about someone being pristine, right? It's about understanding complexity, because if history is about identity, we want our children to see the complexities about being human, right? My colleague, Dr. Ashley Woodson here at the University of Missouri, has written about this notion of citizenship in the social studies classroom and how many children believe that they can't be productive or active citizens because these historical characters are so perfect, right? And they feel that they're not perfect. Now, there needs to be some nuance in that, right? That's why the whole components are about the nuance in there, right? So we talk about power, agency, resistance, and global Black history, then of course we're kind of connecting everything together, but that's where teacher professional development comes into play and how we kind of approach those particular topics in the classroom.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And it's such an interesting point to think about how we give students role models, but if we paint them as too perfect, we make it unreachable.
Yes.
We have a couple of callers on the line and some questions. You are welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have this question from Jessica, and this is for you, Stephanie, although LeGarrette, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it as well. She says, I would love to hear your guests' opinions on balancing discussions in today's political environment when parents are obviously teaching their children how to think and the school has to be fair and unbiased about it. I'm scared we don't talk to our children enough about empathy and how to be open-minded, but I know that if a teacher were to bring any of that up, they'd get in trouble with parents. So how do you find that balance? Stephanie?
Well, I definitely appreciate this question, and it's a question that I receive a lot. And I do want to preface this comment with saying that there is no such thing as an apolitical classroom. There is no such thing as a classroom or a teacher that can not have an opinion about something. Even a teacher who chooses not to say anything is telling their side of the story. And I think one of our roles as being educators is figuring out what is our objective in the classroom today. Do we want to create a brave space inside of the classroom where students can talk about things? You don't necessarily have to worry about teachers bringing, some teachers choose to bring in things that may not be appropriate for some households. That's going to happen all the time. But I think what we need to focus on in preparing teachers to be in the classroom is thinking about how can we help students have critical discussions where everyone doesn't have to agree. I think that we need to have conversations around policing people's tone. I think we need to have conversations around the use of demanding a civil conversation. I think that there are ways in which we can have really great productive discussions that include emotion and that include people sharing their points of view and what it means to be in their body at this particular time. It takes a lot of work. It's not easy to do, but I don't want teachers to come in with the assumption that they are neutral beings in the classroom, because no one is neutral. So we just need people who are willing to engage in this work, and it's hard, and it's not for everybody, but what we get when we don't do it is that we get some of the results that I'm mapping on in this particular project.
It's such a problematic time because things that didn't used to be considered political have been politicized. I mean, that's got to be a constant battle for teachers as well. Things that they used to feel safe talking about, they may not feel safe talking about now.
Well, I think that's another misconception that that there has always been something safe to talk about. I think about this idea of mapping racial trauma in schools, and that for some teachers, it has always been safe for them to bring up slavery or have students reenact slavery in simulations, but they never thought about, is it safe for the students in my classroom to do this? And that's where we need to really take a look and break this idea open of how are we creating safe and brave spaces inside of our classrooms for all of our students. I think what that project, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think what this project is showing is that schools are not safe spaces for all kids. And we need to be able to confront that in a way where all students can get an equitable and safe education.
LeGarrett, did you have anything you want to add to that?
Yes. So in socialized education, we deal with this a lot, particularly in teacher education, where we help teachers teach about difficult conversations, right? So we see people like Dr. Wayne Janelle from the University of North Carolina, Greensboro, the Stanford Education Group and Teaching Tolerance that does really good jobs in helping teachers facilitate these particular types of conversations. Because if we would like to think, particularly in the social studies field, that classrooms are democratic spaces and democracy is ugly, right? So there needs to be more teacher education for these teachers. Also, a good strategy as well is to have parent buy-in, right? And include parents within this notion of developing your classrooms around these particular tough issues and conversations.
We had Dee call in from Des Moines, and she couldn't stay on the line, but I want to relay her question, which is, so, you know, as a person in the community who is concerned about this, who cares about this, what do you do? What can people do to affect the curriculum that's being taught in the schools? LeGarrett?
That question. I'm sorry.
I would love to hear from either one of you. LeGarrett, I'll let you go first.
Okay, well, first is to realize that there are tons of resources now, particularly with the internet age, tons of resources. One resource that I love to use is the blackpass.org, which is a website that deals with a lot of encyclopedia entries around Black history, as well as primary sources and videos and audio clips around trying to learn various different things. Sometimes, as well, you have to take the learning outside of schools, right? So you'll see a lot of Black churches that deal with notions of Black history. We have several different Black history, mobile Black history museums that are around the country now, one by Khaled Alakim from Michigan, the Black History 101. And he travels around the country and helps educate the community about Black history. So there are tons of resources available that we can definitely help your listeners extract.
Yeah, Stephanie, what would you like to add?
If any of the listeners are on Twitter, I would encourage them to follow a couple of hashtags. First is the hashtag Clear the Air, which is a group of educators and researchers and stakeholders and parents who are involved in this idea of learning more from each other. And also I would look at the hashtag Diverse Texts, which talks about how can we get different representative titles inside the classroom at all ages, K through college. And also I will plug Teaching Tolerance for this work to understand what ways we can do this. But I also want to encourage your constituents and the people of Iowa that when they hear something happening in the classroom that may be problematic, just to be able to use their voice and advocate for it. There are other ways in which we can learn about and teach about Black history and other histories inside of this curriculum that do not involve traumatizing students. I think these instances tend to come up only when Black and brown students are implicated or they're involved in the schools. But what my research has shown is that these incidents are happening in schools where there are no minoritized students. So we have to have a responsibility to interrupt for the sake of white children understanding more about histories other than the ones that we typically teach inside of schools.
Well, and I think that raises such an important point. And LeGarrette, you were mentioning that a lot of this teaching happens outside of the classrooms with different organizations getting involved. But a lot of that teaching, that extracurricular teaching, focuses on students of color or people of color. And of course, everybody needs to be exposed. Everybody needs to learn about this history because it's relevant to everyone, no matter what their skin color is. So that's a big challenge, isn't it, LeGarrette?
No, because a lot of these places, particularly places that are developed through the Black community, there's no discrimination there, right? You know, white people can come freely and learn about these particular histories and advance in communities. And we do have a lot of white people. Like, for instance, a few weeks ago in Columbia, Missouri, we had a Juneteenth celebration, and maybe 60 people showed up, and a good majority of them were white people, or whatever the case may be. So, you know, I would say, you know, if people really want to learn about these histories and become anti-racist during that particular time, then, you know, look and understand and come to these particular events.
The Carter Center for K-12 Black History, you are developing a lot of resources for teachers. Are these also resources that individuals who want to do a better job educating their own children can access?
Yes. In teaching and making Black history more accessible, everyone is needed to approach. So not only just educators, and through our conference, we see people that are nonprofits, business, people from the business community, and just lay persons that are just extremely interested in helping their knowledge as well as teaching in their particular communities. They come as well. So the Carter Center is for everyone.
And this sounds like a call to action for parents on a lot of levels, parents to demand better curriculum in their schools, but also to engage better with their children. Do you feel that way, LeGarrette?
Yes, there are lots of children's literature books out there, particularly during story time, from looking at history. Many different white parents do not include diverse children's literature out there for their children to engage with throughout that. And that can help parents as well begin to start having those conversations with their children.
LeGarrette King, thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
LeGarrette King, an associate professor of social studies education at the University of Missouri and the founding director of the Carter Center for K-12 Black History. And Stephanie Jones, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Stephanie Jones, an assistant professor of education at Grinnell College. She's behind the project Mapping Racial Trauma in Schools. You can follow that project on Facebook or Twitter. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Caitlin Harab, Rick Brewer, and Dennis Reese. Please subscribe to our podcast. You never need to miss an episode if you subscribe to Talk of Iowa wherever you get your podcasts. This is Talk of Iowa.